Chapter 11. Molo waked me by pulling on the blanket in the morning, and I was dressing, dressed, and out washing the sleep out of my eyes before I was really awake. It was still very dark, and I could see Pop's back shattered against the fire. I walked over holding the early morning cup of hot tea and milk in my hand, waiting for it to be cool enough to drink. "Morning," I said.
"Morning,"
he answered in that husky whisper. "Sleep?"
"Very well. Feeling fit?"
"Sleepy is all." I drank the tea and spat the leaves into the fire.
"Tell your bloody fortune with those," Pop said.
"No fear." Breakfast in the dark with a lantern, cool, juice, slippery apricots, hash, hot-centered brown, and ketchup spread, two fried eggs, and the warm, promise-keeping coffee. On the third cup, Pop, watching, smoking his pipe, said,
"Too early for me to face it yet."
"Get you?"
"A little."
"I'm getting exercise," I said. "Doesn't bother me."
"Bloody anecdotes," Pop said. "Mem Sahib must think we're silly buggers."
"I'll think up some more."
"Nothing better than drinking. Don't know why it should make you feel bad."
"Are you bad?"
"Not too."
"Take a spot of Enos."
"It's this damned riding in cars."
"Well, today's the day."
"Remember to take it very easy."
"You're not worried about that, are you?"
"Just a touch."
"Don't. It never worries me a minute, truly."
"Good. Better get going."
"Have to make a trip first." Standing in front of the canvas circle of the latrine, I looked, as each morning, at that fuzzy blur of stars that the romanticists of astronomers call the Southern Cross. Each morning at this moment, I observed the Southern Cross in solemn ceremony. Pop was at the car. Im Cola handed me the Springfield, and I got in the front. The tragedian and his tracker were in the back. Im Cola climbed in with them.
"Good luck," Pop said.
Someone was coming from towards the tents. It was P.O.M. in her blue robe and mosquito boots.
"Oh, good luck," she said. "Please, good luck."
I waved and we started. The headlights were showing the way to the road. There was nothing on the salt when we came up to it, after leaving the car about 3 miles away and making a very careful stalk. Nothing came all morning. We sat with our heads down in the blind, each covering a different direction through openings in the thatched withes. And always I expected the miracle of the bull kudu coming majestic and beautiful through the open scrub to the gray, dusty opening in the trees where the salt lick was worn, grooved, and trampled. There were many trails to it through the trees, and on any one a bull might come silently. But nothing came. When the sun was up, and we were warmed after the misty cold of the morning, I settled my rump deeper in the dust and lay back against the wall of the hole, resting against the small of my back and my shoulders, and still able to see out through the slit in the blind. Putting the Springfield across my knees, I noticed that there was rust on the barrel. Slowly, I pulled it along and looked at the muzzle. It was freshly brown with rust. "The bastard never cleaned it last night after the rain," I thought. And very angry, I lifted the lug and slipped the bolt out. Im Cola was watching me with his head down. The other two were looking out through the blind. I held the rifle in one hand for him to look through the breech, and then put the bolt back in and shoved it forward softly, lowering it with my finger on the trigger so that it was ready to cock rather than keeping it on the safety. Im Cola had seen the rusty bore. His face had not changed, and I said nothing, but I was full of contempt, and there had been indictment, evidence, and condemnation without a word being spoken. So we sat there, he with his head bent so only the bald top showed, me leaning back and looking out through the slit, and we were no longer partners, no longer good friends, and nothing came to the salt. At 10 o'clock, the breeze, which had come up in the east, began to shift around, and we knew it was no use. Our scent was being scattered in all directions around the blind, as sure to frighten any animals as though we were revolving a searchlight in the dark. We got up out of the blind and went over to look in the dust of the lick for tracks. The rain had moistened it, but it was not soaked, and we saw several kudu tracks, probably made early in the night, and one big bull track, long, narrow, heart-shaped, clearly, deeply cut. We took the track and followed it on the damp, reddish earth for 2 hours in thick bush that was like second-growth timber at home. Finally, we had to leave it in stuff we could not move through. All this time, I was angry about the uncleaned rifle, and yet happy and eager with anticipation, that we might jump the bull and get a snap at him in the brush. But we did not see him. And now, in the big heat of noon, we made three long circles around some hills and finally came out into a meadow full of little, humpy Maasai cattle and, leaving all shade behind, trailed back across the open country under the noon sun to the car. Kamau, sitting in the car, had seen a kudu bull pass 100 yards away. He was headed toward the salt lick at about 9 o'clock when the wind began to be tricky, had evidently caught our scent and gone back into the hills, tired, sweating, and feeling more sunk than angry now. I got in beside Kamau and we headed the car toward camp. There was only one evening left now, and no reason to expect we would have any better luck than we were having. As we came to camp in the shade of the heavy trees, cool as a pool, I took the bolt out of the Springfield and handed the rifle, boltless, to Mkola without speaking or looking at him. The bolt I tossed inside the opening of our tent onto my cot. Pop and POM were sitting under the dining tent.
"No luck?" Pop asked gently.
"Not a damned bit." Bull went by the car headed toward the salt. Must have spooked off. We hunted all over hell.
"Didn't you see anything?" POM asked. "Once we thought we heard you shoot."
"That was Garrick shooting his mouth off. Did the scouts get anything?"
"Not a thing. We've been watching both hills."
"Hear from Carl?"
"Not a word."
"I'd like to have seen one," I said. I was tired out and slipping into bitterness fast. God damn them. What the hell did he have to blow that lick to hell for the first morning and gut shoot a lousy bull and chase him all over a son of a bitch in country, spooking it to holy bloody hell?
Bastards, said POM, staying with me in my unreasonableness. Sons of bitches.
You're a good girl, I said. I'm all right, or I will be.
It's been awful, she said. Poor old Papa.
You have a drink, Pop said. That's what you need.
I've hunted them hard, Pop. I swear to God I have. I've enjoyed it, and I haven't worried up until today. I was so damn sure. Those damn tracks all the time. What if I never see one? How the hell do I know we can ever get back here again?
Oh, you'll be back, Pop said. You don't have to worry about that. Go ahead, drink it.
I'm just a lousy, belly-aching bastard, but I swear that they haven't gotten on my nerves until today.
Bellyache, said Pop. Better to get it out.
What about lunch? Asked POM. Aren't you frightfully hungry?
The hell with lunch. The thing is, Pop, we've never seen them on the salt in the evening, and we've never seen a bull in the hills. I've only got tonight. It looks washed up. 3 times I've had them cold, and Carl and the Austrian and the Wanderobo beat us.
We're not beaten, said Pop. Drink another one of those.
We had lunch, a very good lunch. It was just over when Caddy came and said there was someone to see Pop. We could see their shadows on the tent fly. Then they came around to the front of the tent. It was the old man of the first day, the old farmer. But now he was gotten up as a hunter and carried a long bow and a sealed quiver of arrows. He looked older, more disreputable, and tireder than ever, and his getup was obviously a disguise. With him was the skinny, dirty Wanderobo with the slit and curled-up ears, who stood on one leg and scratched the back of his knee with his toes. His head was on one side, and he had a narrow, foolish, and depraved-looking face. The old man was talking earnestly to Pop, looking him in the eye and speaking slowly, without gestures.
"What's he done? Gotten himself up like that to get some of the scout money?" I asked.
"Wait," Pop said.
"Look at the pair of them," I said. "That goofy Wanderobo and that lousy old fake. What's he say, Pop?"
"He isn't finished," Pop said.
Finally, the old man was finished, and he stood there leaning on his property bow. They both looked very tired, but I remember thinking they looked like a couple of disgusting fakes.
"He says," Pop began, "they have found a country where there are kudu and sable. He has been there 3 days. They know where there's a big kudu bull, and he has a man watching him now."
"Do you believe it?" I could feel the liquor and the fatigue drain out of me and the excitement come in.
"God knows," said Pop.
"How far away is the country?"
"One day's march. I suppose that's 3 or 4 hours in the car, if the car can go."
"Does he think the car can get in?"
"None has ever been in, but he thinks you can make it."
"When did they leave the man watching the kudu?"
"This morning."
"Where are the sable?"
"There in the hills."
"How do we get in?"
"I can't make out except that you cross the plain, go around the mountain, and then south. He says no one has ever hunted there. He hunted there when he was young."
"Do you believe it?"
Well, of course, natives lie like hell, but he tells it very straight.
Let's go.
You'd better start right away. Go as far as you can in the car, and then use it for a base and hunt on from there. The Mem Sahib and I will break camp in the morning, move the outfit, and go on to where Dan and Mr. T are. Once the outfit is over that black cotton stretch, we're all right if the rain catches us. You come on and join us. If you're caught, we can always send the car back by Kandoa, if worse comes, and the truck's down to Tanga and around.
Don't you want to come?
Ah, you're better off alone on a show like this. The more people, less game you'll see. You should hunt Kudu alone. I'll move the outfit and look after little Mem Sahib.
All right, I said. And I don't have to take Garrick or Abdullah?
Hell no. Take Imkola, Kamal, and these two. I'll tell Mola to pack your things. Go light as hell.
God damn it, Pop. Do you think it could be true?
Maybe, said Pop. We have to play it.
How do you say sable?
Tarahala.
Valhalla, I can remember. Do the females have horns?
Sure, but you can't make a mistake. The bull is black and they're brown. You can't go wrong.
Has Imkola ever seen one?
I don't think so. You got four on your license. Anytime you can better one, go ahead.
Are they hard to kill?
Oh, they're tough. They're not like a kudu. If you got one down, be careful how you walk up to him.
What about time?
We've got to get out. Make it back tomorrow night if you can. Use your own judgment. I think this is the turning point. You'll get a kudu.
Do you know what it's like? I said. It's just like when we were kids and we heard about a river no one had ever fished out in Huckleberry Plains beyond the sturgeon and the pigeon.
How'd that river turn out?
Listen, we had a hell of a time to get in, and the night we got there just before dark and I saw it, there was a deep pool and a long, straight stretch, and the water so cold you couldn't keep your hand in it. And I threw a cigarette butt in, and a big trout hit it, and they kept snapping it up and spitting it out as it floated until it went to pieces.
Big trout?
The biggest kind.
God save us, said Pop. And what'd you do then?
Rigged up my rod and made a cast, and it was dark, and there was a nighthawk swooping around, and it was cold as a bastard. And then I was fast to three fish the second the flies hit the water.
Did you land them?
The three of them.
You damn liar.
I swear to God.
I believe you. Tell me the rest when you come back. Were they big trout?
The biggest bloody kind.
God save us, said Pop. You're gonna get a kudu. Get started.
In the tent, I found POM and told her.
Not really.
Yes.
Hurry up, she said. Don't talk, get started.
I found raincoat, extra boots, socks, bathrobe, bottle of quinine tablets, citronella, notebook, a pencil, my solids, the cameras, the emergency kit, knife, matches, extra shirt and undershirt, a book, two candles, money, the flask, what else?
Have you got soap? Take a comb and a towel. Got handkerchiefs?
All right. Molo had everything packed in a rucksack, and I found my field glasses. Imkola taking Pop's big field glasses, a canteen with water, and Caddy sending a chop box with food.
Take plenty of beer, Pop said. You can leave it in the car. We're short on whiskey, but there's a bottle.
Well, how will that leave you?
All right, but there's more at the other camp. We sent two bottles on with Mr. K.
I only need the flask, I said. We'll split the bottle.
Take plenty of beer, then. There's any amount of it.
What's the bastard doing? I said, pointing at Garrick, who was getting into the car.
He says you and Imkola won't be able to talk with the natives there. You'll have to have someone to interpret.
He's poison.
You will need someone to interpret whatever they speak into Swahili.
All right, but tell him he's not running the show and to keep his bloody mouth shut.
We'll go to the top of the hill with you, Pop said,
and we started off, the Wanderobo hanging to the side of the car.
Going to pick the old man up in the village.
Everyone in the camp was out to watch us go. Have we got plenty of salt?
Yes.
Now we were standing by the car on the road in the village waiting for the old man and Garrick to come back from their huts. It was early afternoon, and the sky was clouding over, and I was looking at POM very desirable, cool and neat-looking in her khaki and her boots, her Stetson on one side of her head, and at Pop, big, thick, and faded corduroy sleeveless jacket that was almost white now from washing and the sun. You be a good girl.
Don't ever worry. I wish I could go.
It's a one-man show, Pop said. You want to get in fast and do the dirty and get out fast. You've a big load as it is.
The old man appeared and got into the back of the car with Imkola, who was wearing my old khaki sleeveless quail shooting coat.
Imkola's got the old man's coat, Pop said.
He likes to carry things in the game pockets, I said. M. Cola saw we were talking about him. I'd forgotten about the uncleaned rifle. Now I remembered it and said to Pop, "Ask him where he got the new coat." M. Cola grinned and said something.
"He says it's his property."
I grinned at him and he shook his old bald head, and it was understood that I had said nothing about the rifle. "Where's that bastard Garrick?" I asked. Finally, he came with his blanket and got in with M. Cola and the old man behind. The Wanderobo sat with me in front beside Camo.
"That's a lovely-looking friend you have," POM said. "You be good, too."
I kissed her goodbye, and we whispered something.
"Billing and cooling," Pop said. "Disgusting."
"Goodbye, old bastard."
"Goodbye, you damn bullfighter."
"Goodbye, sweet."
"Goodbye, and good luck."
"You've plenty of petrol, and we'll leave some here," Pop called.
I waved, and we were starting downhill through the village on a narrow track that led down and onto the scrubby dry plain that spread out below the two great blue hills. I looked back as we went down the hill and saw the two figures, the tall, thick one and the small, neat one, each wearing big Stetson hats, silhouetted on the road as they walked back toward camp. Then I looked ahead at the dried up, scrubby plain.